I can see why you guys get a lot of plays lately, because you have engagement. Like,
right, yeah. It's
whoever's running the site during game day could tweet like a fart and it gets like a lot.
I know. Mine have exploded this season.
Your what exploded?
My tweets, not my farts.
Oh, okay.
Hello and welcome to the Hammer and Rails podcast. My name is Casey Bartley, writer for thehammerandrails.com. I am with thesportsbank.net. Mr. Paul M. Banks on Twitter. How you doing, Paul?
Doing good. Happy Lincoln's birthday and happy Darwin Day.
Oh, I didn't know we were breaking trivia facts. You're really good at trivia, aren't you?
Yeah, whatever. I just looked at whatever was trending on Twitter and saw that, but no, there will be nuggets of trivia in this podcast, I promise you.
Okay, good. I actually yesterday rode by Abraham Lincoln's brother's house, I believe. It's in Bennington, Vermont. I'm away on vacation, and there's a bunch of like famous people up here, and he was one of them, but I did not know it was his birthday.
Oh, so that's, you're in Vermont right now?
I am.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It's very cold. Actually, it's warm. Everything's melting now. It's kind of sad, but there's still a lot of pretty mountains to look at.
So it's like 50, 55, something 40, something like that?
Don't get crazy. It's like maybe 42. It's just warm for where we are. So on tap for tonight, we're going to talk about, obviously, the big Purdue-Michigan State game over the weekend. You wrote two articles on why Michigan State and Purdue, why each one might deserve a one seed. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the prevailing narrative about Purdue, which is this Isaac Casas' team on offense, and should it be? And we'll just finish up with some Big Ten Conference race talk. So first off, let's just start. What did you think about Purdue going into Michigan State? It's obviously a weird time for Purdue. We came off 19 straight wins to now losing two in a row in our first two real challenges in a long time. How'd you feel Purdue looked going into East Lansing?
I thought they were looking great. I felt like the Ohio State game was there for the taking. Had they just spread the ball around a little bit more and stayed true to their identity of who they are and who they've been this season. I also felt that a one-point loss to a highly ranked team like the Buckeyes wasn't the end of the world. And then heading into that game, I thought, man, it's been a very down year for the Big Ten, and there's been a lot of lacking in big games, but it made me feel like, all right, it's really college basketball season now again. We've got like a really big game here, and I kind of wish I wish there were two, not just one, but the fact that there's one gave it a lot more hype, and I did like Purdue's chances heading into it, because Michigan State, you know the drill. You know that they're going to stumble in January and February, and then they're going to pick it back up in March. And it kind of seems like the Spartans got the stumbles out of the way already in January. And then I felt like it was a great – I mean, Purdue took them down to the wire. I thought both teams looked impressive.
It is weird because I don't know how you exactly know how to feel after a game like that, because for the most part, Purdue was on the road and dominating that game. Maybe they weren't running away with it, obviously, but they did lead for a good portion of it. They looked composed. They looked talented. They looked like a team with a lot of balance. And Michigan State lines up with them big body-wise as well as almost anyone in the country. And Purdue was still able to get their shots, but they let another double-digit lead fade away. Finishing matters. Obviously, it's the difference between when you have a one-game elimination at the end of the year that decides your season. Being able to close out games is a big thing. And Purdue fans, obviously, we have a stigma. We think we lose all the big games. Do you think that is overblown?
Of course it's overblown. Welcome to the social media age. Welcome to the era of endless media and therefore a vast array of competition for attention spans, which means everything must be magnified. And the thing about Purdue is that it was it the 4-13 or 13-4 in 2016. I think that was when the stigma really stuck, because when it happens in the NCAA tournament, it was a three or was it was it a 3-14 or a 14-3? But
Here's the problem. Are you talking about the Little Rock game, the Cincinnati game? We've got quite a few games where we completely threw it away.
To the outsider, to the outside Purdue community, the Little Rock game is like the, you know, that if you had a greatest hits album of Purdue blown leads, the Little Rock one, that you would you would close your set with that. Like, that's your signature hit for that.
Yeah, it was the 2015-2016 season. So these guys were all sophomores. And it was a game where Purdue was up 63-49 with 4 minutes and 25 seconds left. And it was a 4 seed against, what does that make it at?
13.
Yeah, 13 seed, I do believe.
Because I covered the tournament last year in Milwaukee, and man, watching Purdue Twitter in the final moments of somewhat
Iowa
in
State.
Iowa State was, that's what I was getting to. Man, just the impending sense of doom on Purdue Twitter in the Iowa State game. And, you know, they were kind of in control the whole way, but, you know, I get it. I mean,
but that's how we lose. Like, Purdue loses by being in control for 39 minutes and 49 seconds.
Do you feel like that is why, when the criticism comes from Matt Painter, which Travis enjoys retweeting, do you feel it's because of that? Like, that's where the Painter haters come from?
I think early on it was a little more, but that is pretty much all you have to look on. It just happens to be like a very big thing to look at, because there are a lot of games where it literally was just no business losing, and we just tighten up and we can't score for the last 8 minutes of a game. And I mean, the same thing kind of happened with Ohio State. You're up 14 points in the second half and you can't close it out at home in a Mackey Arena that was as loud as I've ever heard it, and sustained loud. Like, I might draw a lot of criticism for this. Pure decibel wise, I don't know if Mackey Arena is louder than Assembly Hall. Like, just pure what their height, like the height is. But Assembly Hall is a very angry crowd and it's very quick to get loud. But Mackey Arena will stay, like, you feel it everywhere inside your body for like 2 minutes. It's insane. And that was the best crowd I've ever heard. And we still blew a terrible loss.
Yes, that is definitely going to bring out the Hoosier faithful. Talking about them being angry. I'd say the best experience I've ever had in Mackey was what I like to call the El Clasico, Indiana-Purdue. Last year, it was the game that won the Big Ten regular season title. And that, I think Chris Foreman tweeted out some stats that compared it to rock, the decibel level to rock concerts and jet engines. I have to look it up, but it'd be interesting to see what was the ultimate loudest moment in Mackey. And I think it just, the Ohio State game reinforced the stereotype. And I honestly think that the narrative won't go away until business is taken care of in the NCAA tournament. I think the Little Rock game, because it was a tournament game, amplified that. And I think that obviously there was a very kind of tournament-like atmosphere in these last few games for Purdue. But it's going to go back to, can they play above their seed and go further with it? Like, I'm not sure of how many what the history is with Purdue of winning games as a lower seed, but as long as they can hold that kind of line and go as far as they can with that, then I think you can kind of put that narrative to bed, like with the idea of Clemsoning. You know, Clemson won a national title, so there is no Clemsoning anymore.
It's right on line with, you know, all the curses, Cubs, Boston Red Sox. You're never going to feel like you're completely away from it until you win. I think for Purdue, we need to be a Final Four team before fans get off of Painter's back. It feels like it's been, this animosity has grown for so many years that something really big has to happen. And the fact we've not gotten past even the Sweet 16 is a real sore spot. And there's just a lack of faith. And the only way, like, you restore faith is miracles. And Purdue is going to very likely come in as a 1 or 2 seed. So the excuse of being a 3 or 4 or 5 seed where you have to play someone tough in the second round, third round, goes away a little bit. And it's, you know, a group full of seniors. This is the best team we're going to have in a long time. And if they can't do it, there's only one constant in college basketball, and that's your coach. So right. All that pain is just going to pile up. All the animosity and everything, fairly or unfairly, will all end up squarely on his back, especially if this team, who rose to, you know, 19 straight wins, top 3 ranking in the nation, had a chance to claim the number one spot. If we win both of those games, we're for sure number one, I would say. If you win one of them, you might still get it. And it just seems like every real big test, we can't quite clear the hurdle.
Well, the Wisconsin game, it started to, the expectations really rose with the metrics saying that Purdue is the odds-on favorite, not only just in the gambling world, but in the, you know, the projection world of
the top 10 in both in KenPom.
Right. I think they were 2 in KenPom or Sagarin or 1 at some point. I mean, it fluctuates all the time, but that just rose expectations so much. I guess the good news for Painter and for people that just kind of want to see this tension chill is that I completely agree with you that getting you a Final Four would be enough. I don't think it has to be a national title because there hasn't been a Final Four since 1980. I could, I would think that that would be enough versus some places. I mean, you know, this guy who produces, produced for WGN, I go on their show every now and then. He always tells me that the real reason he thinks Tom Crean was fired is because he did not get to a Final Four with that 2012 team that was the number one seed overall. And he's like, he didn't need to win the national title of that team, although they were kind of considered the favorite because they were the number one overall seed. He's like, if they just would have gotten to a Final Four. And then, of course, you know, he was fired much later, but he firmly believes that, and I agree with him.
And I don't know. It's, on one hand, you're like, how can you really take a coach's season down to one season when the NCAA tournament is a crapshoot? Like, it just is. There's no one game winner takes all format that is going to guarantee you the best team. But he also had Cody Zeller and Victor Oladipo and Yogi Ferrell. And they what, got bounced in the Sweet 16?
Yeah, by Syracuse, because Tom Crean just seems to forget that they play a 2-3 zone there.
Cody Zeller is designed in college to break a 2-3 zone. Just have him catch the ball at the elbow. That's all you have to do.
But, you know, it's just the nature of college basketball itself.
It is.
And it's very unfortunate because, you know, we're college hoops wonks. We're college basketball literati, and we get into November and December games, and just the money and the hype and the publicity is all in March Madness, and it's just so disproportional, and that's why everything's going to be attributed to that. I agree with you. If you get a bad matchup, you know, it's 5 guys, and if you've got 1 or 2 mismatches that can be exploited, you couple that with an off-shooting night, and then anything can happen, and it just derails your season.
Yeah, basketball is a weird sport. It's not designed to be a winner-take-all. But getting into that, those one games matter, and 2 straight, Purdue failed to do it, and both games were eerily similar for Purdue fans. It came down to a lot of Isaac Haas in the post. Nationally, it's gotten a lot of coverage. Mark Titus wrote a piece on The Ringer about Coach Painter's dilemma almost is because when a team is telling you, yes, we're only going to guard the best post player in college one-on-one, why wouldn't you go to that? You limit turnovers. You get a guy who shoots 60% from the field. But you just wrote a piece about Carson Edwards and how he, and I'm assuming you don't, I know you don't agree with that philosophy. You still think Carson Edwards is the key to Purdue's offense, right?
I do, but with a caveat. I think that Purdue, I think it was you who tweeted this, or one of the other Hammer and Rails guys who tweeted this, that this team knows its identity better than almost any team in the country. And a lot of that has come from the competitive advantage of playing together in the summer and internationally. And, you know, that, hey, you know, you, everybody uses what they have to their advantage, and that's an advantage. They have chemistry. They have cohesion. You know, is Isaac Haas the team's alpha dog? What about Carson Edwards? What about Vince Edwards? You kind of have three legitimate go-to guys. And I just feel that Purdue has made its way this year, and they've achieved what they have by having good ball rotation, by spreading it around, by kind of not being, you know, that just, that doesn't seem like Purdue basketball to me. The idea of feed it to one guy and just stand around. And a lot of people were complaining about that at the Ohio State game, just stand around and watch him do it. So that would be my counter to the idea of, hey, you've got a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Award final. Feeding it to him. I would counter that with, yeah, well, you've got a Jerry West Award finalist out on the perimeter, and you've got, you know, you've, and then you've got, you know, Vince, who's obviously been up and down, but you think about all that he's accomplished over the course of his career. So yeah, that would
I definitely think you're touching on the magic of Purdue, especially when we were really running it, you know, when we were running Butler off the floor and everyone in the Big Ten. It's that almost at all times we do have five guys on the floor that can threaten an offense from multiple ways. And especially with the way Michigan State was just blindly go just one-on-one island. Like you said, Purdue knows how to run that. They are consistent. There's not another team in college that literally, if the coach said, give this guy the ball every time, there's not another team in college that could actually run that. Our seniors are so disciplined. We've been running this offense for 4 years, almost everyone. And it makes you – there's four guys on the floor for Michigan State that game in the last 10 minutes that didn't have to work on defense. And that makes their offense better. And I am a big believer in especially college basketball. You need variance on offense especially. You can't ever let a defense get comfortable. When they get comfortable, they play better, they get confidence, they get in a rhythm. So I'm not sure any one strategy I would ever fully agree with going to.
Right. It's just kind of like, it's a basketball equivalent of when they ask, are you going to be a run-based team or a pass-based team? Mm-hmm. And every coach hates that question. Every coach, you know, talks without speaking when he answers the question. The same, it's just like inside, outside. You got to have both. And I was astounded when I got the press release with the box score after the Ohio State game, when I saw four guys scored for Purdue. I'm like, what are you like? What is this, a mistake? Four guys? They've got, you know, they're what they have over other teams is leadership and experience and all that time that they've worked together, and that they've got to play to that.
And it's been a problem this year. Purdue's bench has not produced points, which you don't really need them to when you do have that many, you know, seniors and experienced players, but you can't have four people scoring a game. And PJ Thompson missed five open threes. If you're only going to have that few, then those few have to be on fire. And I don't think that's sustainable. And part of that is both of those games were heavy on, you know, going to Isaac in the post. As a guard player, it's hard to get in a rhythm when you know where the ball is going to be and it's not going to be in your hands.
I completely agree with that. I mean, that I think that's something – that's a principle that translates all levels of basketball. When you know you're not going to be a factor, or you're going to be a one-way player, you're only going to be a factor on one end or not much, it'll just – it's human nature to then just stand around and watch. And
so do you is Carson Edwards Purdue's best player to you?
He is to me because of the leap that he's made, because he just wasn't – I think he was the 24th rated point guard coming out of his class. Mm-hmm. And he did average double figures as a freshman. He was solid, but no one could have anticipated this really. And I mean, there's talk about him and Harms actually about leaving early, but that seems kind of ridiculous to me. I think they would both stay. With Carson, I guess I'm just biased because he's undersized and what he can accomplish. He's so undersized for his position, and maybe I'm a little bit biased towards guards, but the reason I feel Carson Edwards is the best player is because I just see more happening when he's the center of the offense. And I don't want to contradict myself in saying that, you know, obviously I think it should be an offense that's based around sharing the wealth and getting everyone involved. But if there's going to be a focal point, I'm going to pick Carson as a focal point because I just think he can do more.
I agree with you. And especially you touch on his improvement. Like last year, he looked like the player he could be this year, but the efficiency numbers just weren't there. He was a 41% shooter from the field for two, a 34% three-point shooter. This year, he's 53% from two-point range, 40% from three. He's already taken more attempts from deep. A lot of them are dribble pull-ups, high difficulty. And he's assisting the ball 6% more of the time and turning it over 5% less of the time. He is a rare playmaker that isn't making the mistakes that he made as a freshman last year. And it seems to me like Haas should be the ultimate release valve for an offense. If you get into 12 seconds, you don't have anything going, then find him the ball. Carson's a guy that can just create havoc everywhere for everyone else.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think you touched on the most important point is cutting down the turnovers and being more efficient with the assists. I mean, that to me is, I think, to me, that's even more important than the scoring and the shooting because he's just become such more of an efficient player. And I think a lot of it comes from being on Team USA and the under 19s and being coached by Cal. And, you know, Calipari guards, that's a legendary, even though it was just a little, just for a little while that he was under the tutelage of Calipari. I mean, that, of course, that doesn't explain why his own guards aren't evolving this year in Lexington, but.
Well, his guards have, you know, played probably half the basketball Carson has in his career at this point. Basketball is definitely a sport where the more you play, the better you are, especially as a guard.
Very, very much so. And I think that next year will be interesting when PJ has moved on and, you know, Eastern gets the point, but they, in order for Carson to have a future, he's going to have to really develop his, I mean, right now he's playing primarily as a shooting guard, but he was recruited as a point guard and he's got to be a point guard at the next level. So then again, you know, you can have two point guards on the floor at the same time. It's always a good thing.
Yeah, I know his personal trainer, Carson's personal trainer, who's been working on him with skills and adding those dribble moves and working on his jump shot. He always talks about Kimba Walker being his stand-in in the NBA, which there is a lot of merit to. They're both smaller guards that can really quick and move the ball. But I also think you look at someone like Lou Williams, who's limited athletically and size-wise, but can just light it up. There is always a space on the NBA for a guy who can just get buckets. And coming off the bench as a six-man scorer, that's every team needs one of them. And I feel like Carson is so strong for his size. And defensively, I think he has really good instincts. I feel like going forward, he doesn't seem like a guy that could leave early. I don't know if I'm assuming you think he needs all 4 years.
I think he does, but with an asterisk. I also am a firm believer in you strike when the iron's hot. And that's why we really couldn't fault Biggie for bailing last year. And
no, I mean, Robbie Hummel was a lottery pick 1 year. 2 years later, he's barely drafted in the second round.
Exactly. And that's why you got to wonder with Carson even this year is you strike while the iron's hot because Melo Trimble was another guy that maybe should have left earlier and then his stock went down because you're not going to grow. You're not going to get any taller. So,
yeah, I think Melo was gambling on having a big year with that team, which I still look at that roster and I'm like, how did they not go far? They had like four NBA guys.
Yeah, that was insane.
Like modern NBA guys. That is the most confusing team I've seen in the last 10 years.
They didn't even make it to the Elite Eight, did they?
No, it was, that team should have been awesome and they just weren't. But I mean, you are right. Like, I honestly think Harms could leave after his junior year though.
Yeah, I could see that.
He's older already with the transferring over from another country stuff. Plus he's just big and mobile. And if he gets a shot at all, he's going to be very valued. Even though how do you grade his defense? Cause I'm at like a C+.
I would go B-.
Maybe. Yeah. He's over eager. He gets out of possession real early, especially if a guard is even threatening on a pick and roll.
he knows his height and he likes to use it, and that can make him a little bit
it's the nicest way to say he chases blocks regardless, like a dog going for a car bumper. He knows he's faster than the 25 miles per hour speed limit, so he goes for it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I hope your Dutch readers will appreciate what we had to say about that.
They have dogs and cars there, right?
Well, you know, I just learned that that's why they're so good at speed skating, is because the people in Amsterdam actually skate across the frozen river.
Oh, the more you know.
See, I told you there would be...
Yeah, trivia, yeah. Yeah. All right, so I think the fascinating... There's two conversations to be had that are both simultaneous with one another and not related. The Big Ten race and then the chase for the number one seed. Let's just start Big Ten race, because right now Ohio State is in the driver's seat. Do you think they can make a run cleanly through the rest of their tournament slate? I'll go ahead and set up what they have going. Their remaining games are... They go to Penn State, which is all of a sudden looking like a difficult game. They go to Michigan, they host Rutgers, and they go away to Indiana to finish the year. Do you think they run the slate? If they do, any conversation about the Big Ten is a moot point.
That's exactly. They do control their own destiny. And Penn State is the one, you know, they beat them. So that's definitely not the matchup you want. Unless you take the approach that now the Buckeyes are going to be out for revenge. Indiana is still a tough place to play. This isn't such a great Hoosiers team, but
they looked really good against Purdue at Assembly Hall. They looked really good.
When you consider like the disparity in all the metrics this year and then how the season has gone and how close a game that was, yeah, I definitely agree with that.
And they have talent. I think they have the wrong talent put together. But, like, individually, those guys are highly ranked, highly recruited. On a night-to-night basis, they look like real players.
I think Archie's going to really get that program going somewhere. I don't think it's going to take long either. And that's good, because we know that fan base is high standard.
I like them in the basement.
Oh, yeah.
If you even say the word, what's the recruit's name? That would have had more punch if I could remember his name.
Well, I'll just...
He's going to Vanderbilt. That's what I know about him.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, okay. That dude. I'm sorry you guys lost out on that Tiger guy, too, as did DePaul.
I honestly saw his hair and I was out. Like, I don't need that in my life. I watch Elfrid Payton be awful at basketball. I don't need that wrapped up whatever.
It is hysterical when DePaul ends up in as the final cut for a 4-star there.
Oh, what was it? Western Kentucky that got the random top 10 center for like 3 days.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they had that guy in the McDonald's All-American game last year, Western Kentucky. Yeah. good times. But at Michigan, that obviously, if I think Ohio State will beat Penn State, and I think they'll handle Indiana. But if they're going to fall in these last four, I think it's going to be at Michigan. Now, I see Michigan as being kind of an up-and-down team, but given what they did at the Breslin Center, I heard once or twice that Ohio State and Michigan don't like each other. Maybe. Is that true?
There's another sport I think they play that they're both pretty – one of them used to be good at, one's still good at. Lacrosse? No.
Yes, this football America.
Yeah, one of those things. I think there's a slight thing going on, and I get right. Michigan can't beat them in that football, so they probably need to win. I think they're good. I think Michigan's good. That's got to be their Super Bowl, right? Because a win against Ohio State locks them into the tournament, locks them into probably a top 6 seed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're clearly the fourth best team in the Big Ten. It really goes. There's a big three.
Ooh.
Drop off.
My sister is the second smartest out of us. There's two of us. She's the second smartest. That's what that sounds like saying. She just had a baby, by the way. Congrats, Tab. Really happy for the third one. She doesn't listen. It'll be fine.
Well, you know, no one ever expected the league to be like this.
We probably should have, though, right? I was calling Minnesota's collapse. I was calling it halfway through last year.
Me too. That was the most predictable 12 over 5 upset in history.
Yeah. It's Maryland. Turgeon can't be a good coach, right?
I know he's not interesting to listen to. That's I mean, it's like when Homer Simpson was in court and they show what he's thinking and it's just like meow, 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 meow. That's pretty much me at every Turgeon press conference. But I don't know. He was on the hot seat early and then he kind of got things going. But again, to back to our earlier point, he couldn't capitalize on that dream team. So he's not such a great coach.
But yeah, I mean, it's pretty much we need Michigan to win for Purdue's purpose, but also like it'll make our conference look better overall.
I agree.
Ohio State is a Big Ten champion. Does that team really feel like a Big Ten champion team? I know that's salty to say since they literally just beat us at Mackey.
Well, that's because it's such a weird season in that not only do you have all these teams that are massively underachieving and are down, but it's a year in which the football brands are doing better. And that affects the rankings because, you know, you start out the season, the ranking is all pretty much just brand name or history or tradition. And like you see the fifth and sixth best teams, you know, in keeping with the backhanded compliments there, are Nebraska and Penn State.
Ugh.
And
do you think will Penn State make a tournament this year?
Oh, no way. They that is like the ugliest non-conference season. If they beat Ohio State, what are they? They've got 18 wins right now, right? They're 8-6.
And technically they come into Mackey too. And they have a home against Michigan. That is a murderer's row, but if you're them, you have to win two of those three.
And
you probably get in. If you beat Nebraska too?
Yeah, I would say they would have to. They would get two or three signature wins then. And if you look at the Penn State profile, what is their signature win right now?
Definitely Ohio State on the road. It's not even close. On the road.
There's another one.
They beat Maryland at home, Nebraska at home in overtime. There's not many. I mean, they're only. I guess 18-9's all right, but yeah, I mean, that's it. Pittsburgh's not good.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is one of the few remaining conference winless teams in a Power 5.
Coached by a Boilermaker. Attaboy. Stallings.
Well, all right, so Penn State's got 18 wins. I think if they head to New York with 21, then...
That's pretty solid.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a finish.
And you've got Ohio State is RPI 16 last time I checked. So that's one signature win. If you pick up two more, then I guess we could say that.
I didn't tell you this before the podcast. This is an all KenPom podcast. We don't care about RPI.
Oh, well, I was hoping we'd get to do the ESPN RPI that they just made for themselves because
BPI?
Is that what it's called?
I don't know. There's an ESPN BPI and it always loves Purdue. I think we're still a Final Four team last year, even after the Kansas lost.
Yeah, that was a tough one last year. Has Purdue ever had that year where they made a deep run as a low seed? Because that would also...
We've never made a deep run. What are you talking about? Doesn't matter what seed. I mean, for the longest time, it was Painter's like win streak in the first round. We were like 12-0.
No, I'm talking going back later. I'm talking going back further.
Who cares?
Because that is probably one of the biggest things that's wrong with Illinois' history is their Final Fours came as one seeds, and then the other time they were one seed, they were an Elite Eight.
I think the last time Purdue was a one seed, we almost lost to the 16 seed. I think that's our legacy as a top seed.
That was the year Hummel was hurt, wasn't that?
No. Like the 90s. We weren't a one seed with Hummel.
I think they were on track to be a one seed, but then he got hurt, and then
But we ended up as like a 3 or 4 seed because we scored like 12 points in the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, those Big Ten tournament games in Indy early on.
It's trying to hurt me. Don't talk about the Hummel game. That's not cool. Let's go. So we're speaking about the tournament. So you wrote two columns. One, and you can check them both out at thesportsbank.net. It's where you write. I got it right this time. And you pretty much designed the argument for Michigan State as a one seed and Purdue as a one seed. So going forward, who do you think gets the one seed? Or do you think both of them do?
I can't fathom the Big Ten getting half the one seed. And I actually wrote both.
Everyone else is losing.
That's true. But then again, you've got some teams laying in the weeds to come up and snatch that. I mean, I wrote both of these before the NCAA released if the bracket was today. Like, I didn't want to have the bias.
That's a good thing to bring up. Yeah, Purdue was put in as the fourth one seed.
And Michigan State was put in as a three.
A three seed?
Yeah, they're a three seed.
That delights me, but it seems pretty mean.
Okay, well then here, off the top of your head.
By the way, Michigan State's the only team now that qualifies for the top 10 in adjusted offense and defense in KenPom, which is how you win national titles.
Right. More love for KenPom. This podcast brought to you by KenPom. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to get that $20 subscription fee off for next year.
Yeah, I mean, if we keep plugging them, they really should. They should comp you. I mean, it's the least they could do, right? Okay. But no, if you had to guess what Purdue's strength of schedule is and what Michigan State's strength of schedule is off the top of your head, like, give me a ballpark figure.
Purdue 60-something, Michigan State like 105.
Very, very close. Very close. Purdue's 47 and Michigan State's 94.
Okay.
But that's what the soft underbelly of the Big Ten is this year, that you've got a Power 5 team ranked in the top 5 in the polls and, you know, 23, 24 wins. And we're still talking about strength of schedule. And that is that's going to be the killer. That's definitely going to be the killer.
So, I mean, the way their schedules line up, Michigan State has the better wins, right? They've got Duke and...
No, not exactly. They've
top tier wins.
Actually, I don't know if your audience is gonna like to hear this, but I'll definitely have to say it anyway.
That I don't care about my audience. Am I gonna like to hear this?
Well, maybe I can chase it with like some kind of praise or something. But Michigan State needed that game so much more, and the league needed Michigan State to win that game so much more, because here's the crazy thing. Before Saturday, Michigan State had one signature win, North Carolina.
North Carolina, which they're kind of good. North Carolina doesn't scare me.
No, they're very up and down. And
is their best player still Luke May?
I would say so. And I'd say...
Because we have like four of those on our roster.
Well,
every year. I just meant good white guy.
Oh. They have no Marcus Pages to be found, that's for sure.
Okay.
And I don't know, I'm going to my first ever North Carolina game in a couple weeks. So
against who?
Miami. So it's a battle of late 90s, early 2000s rap songs.
Really good football jerseys. What they're like, really good football jerseys, good colors. So does that mean you're leaning still towards Purdue? Like, if they both meet up in the Big Ten tournament championship.
Here's the other thing is, like, Michigan State is just unfortunate in the sense that Notre Dame is not Notre Dame. UConn is a shell of what UConn is. For Purdue, you could say the same with Louisville, but Louisville's...
Louisville's good. I don't care what anyone says. They're in your bracket, you don't feel good.
I'm with you on that. I'm definitely with you on that. And the other thing is Purdue also has the benefit in that when the sky was falling and they were losing it during the Bad Boy Mowers battle for Atlantis, which is all one word. I don't know why. And I don't know why four is the number
four. It's a letter.
When there's not 14. But Western Kentucky's a good mid-major. That is,
I thought they are too, and Tennessee's really good.
Tennessee turned out to be really good. And just as, you know, Il Padrino of Hammer and Rails, the godfather of the site, Travis, said it best at the time. He's like, I want them to whoop up on Arizona, and then I want Arizona to get better later. And that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, but now people hate Arizona again.
I don't know if that's a team I'd want to face.
It's not. It's absolutely not.
Because you got to think, they're going to be a 3 or a 4. Maybe if they get their act together, they'll be a 2. And what if you're a 1 seed, do you want that? That's not good.
You never want to play someone that might be the number one pick.
That's very true.
So do you think, but right now, Michigan State with the win over Purdue, both of them have pretty easy schedules finishing out. Do you think it comes down to just who does better in the tournament, the Big Ten tournament?
Yeah, I couldn't get over it. It's remarkably similar, the final four games for both teams. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just going to come down to – it'll be an interesting I wonder how the dynamic will change with the tournament being a week early. So
does Ohio State get a 1 seed if they went out and win the tournament?
Yeah, of course. I mean,
right?
You'd have to – it's bad.
If they beat – especially if they beat Purdue and Michigan State.
Well, that's the thing, is they'd have to beat someone along the way to do that. They really would. I think. I mean, the way it's set up, they'd have to beat one of the 4 ranked Big Ten teams to get another signature win along the way. And like you said, everybody keeps losing. I mean,
I know, it's bad. No one's good.
Have you ever seen this where a team loses and then becomes number one for the first time in like 30 years? Or
That's ugly. Like, they didn't look like... They looked as meh as a team could possibly look.
Yeah, a lot of times I envy Virginia fans because they have Tony Bennett, who's as fine a young coach as there is. But then I feel sorry for Virginia fans because they have to watch Tony Bennett basketball. And usually, you know, when you win ugly and it's 49-46 or whatever, but when you lose ugly, I don't know. I'd have a problem. I don't know if the committee is going to go on past performance into their seedings, if that matters. But given what Virginia has done lately, how high do you want to rank them? I mean,
I hope not, because that's not a good sign. We'll be put as a 5 seed.
Yeah,
I think it's so weak that this year that it's literally like Virginia and Villanova are going to be locked in as 1 seeds. The fact that Purdue could lose twice in a week and still considered a 1 seed just tells you everything you need to know about basketball. Like, no one's good.
Right, and this really seems like another year where you could get that crazy 7 seed winning it all, or 8 seed, you know, in the final four or something, just because of the fact that – because then when I did the 1 seed columns on the sportsbank.net for both, I looked at who the competition is other than Virginia, Villanova. So Xavier.
Xavier's in there right now.
You got Texas Tech, if they went out, which is insane.
I want to be the 2 seed in the bracket with Texas Tech.
Yeah,
that's what I want.
Well, they handled Northwestern pretty badly.
Cool. Northwestern's awful.
Yeah, it's been a rough year, this all road games thing. But then again, that doesn't excuse why they can't win on the road, though.
Yeah, because Walsh Ryan was such an impressive home court advantage. Loved that arena. Just jam-packed with awesome.
Believe it or not, the new one is going to be smaller in capacity.
That's so weird. Right. Did they buy more light bulbs?
I know it's going to get $110 million. In upgrades, and yeah, that's a good point, man. When it goes dark like that,
it's really dark. Like, I thank God laptops are like brightly lit.
Yeah, when it goes dark, that is just kind of strange. And then the narrow, I mean, everyone's made the jokes about it being like a high school gym or midway.
No. Carmel's high school gym is nicer than Welsh Ryan.
Oh, I believe it.
All right, so we should probably get wrapping up here. Let's just do the old standby. Who's going to win the Big Ten?
Michigan State.
What? Regular season?
They'll win the Big Ten tournament. Michigan State's going to win the Big Ten tournament.
Okay. Who's going to win the regular season?
Purdue's going to win the regular season.
Outright or shared with Ohio State?
Outright.
So Ohio State's going to lose twice.
I think so.
Michigan and the NCAA tournament, Penn State, Nittany Lions? It's hard to say.
Don't quote me on it.
Okay.
But it does not. I listened to the last episode of your podcast, and they're like,
that makes one of us.
Ohio State, like, that just does not sound right.
It doesn't. That's such a weird team. Diop is like a weird player of the year, too.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then I remember the first few Big Ten tournaments that I covered, Ohio State kept winning, and it just got annoying. And it's a shame because their base is like more interested in like spring football offensive guard position battles than
and frat parties. Just making an assumption.
Well, they've got, what do they have, 60,000 enrollment? Something crazy.
Yeah. Sounds awful. All right. Well, I guess I don't know if I feel better or more depressed after talking to you, but.
Well, how do you think I felt? Remember the famous when Michigan State was a 2 seed and they lost to Middle Tennessee as a 15?
Yeah, you threw a lot of shade off of us. That was very kind.
Well, I had yes. Well, I remember because this is what life being a Michigan State Spartan is like. This is what life being a Michigan State.
Please lecture me on your troubles.
Well, when the president, when Obama picks you to win it all. And you're a 4 seed. And then every year there's like, it's the same. It's like, hey, January, March, Izzo. And it's always like, oh, well, they're peaking now because they roll through the Big Ten tournament. And everybody picks you to win it all. And then that year to me, I remember people saying, what a snub. Spartans are not a 1 seed. This is the biggest snub ever. And I had bought tickets to see Sinbad, the comedian. He's a Benton Harbor, Michigan native. Somewhere with us, trust me. So I was just like, damn it, they better be in the early game. The Michigan State game better not be at night because I want to use my tickets to Sinbad. And when they lost, I'm like, you know, this could ruin the mood. Like, the Sinbad show might not be as good when you have this epic involving a Michigan team.
Yeah.
So at least I was able to get over that loss pretty quickly.
I mean, I don't know how else to. Purdue fans, when this tournament starts, book your Sinbad tickets. It will help whatever sorrow comes later. And there's always sorrow.
Because it was late enough in the day, because obviously when you're the headliner, you go on late, that you could head enough
right.
to get over it. So.
You had like 3 or 4 hours at least of power drinking to forget where you were at earlier that day.
Who's like a comedian from the state of Indiana? So if Purdue,
Jim Gaffigan, everyone loves Pat McAfee. So I guess go watch a dude, a grown adult in cut off t-shirt who used to kick leather.
There's a Jim Gaffigan show scheduled on the same day as.
Are you Googling this?
This actually came up at a family party. I told my parents that, like, hey, Sinbad retweeted the photo that I took with him. My brother-in-law's like, that sounds like a rap lyric. Like, yo, I get retweets from Sinbad.
All right, well, I don't know what else to do, so I guess I'll say goodbye. Thank you for listening. I'm Casey Bartley. You can stack my stuff out on Hammer and Rails. Thank you to my guest, Paul M. Banks. You can go read all of his stuff on his website, www.thesportsbank.net. Thank you for listening. Boiler up.